All right. Test 1, 2. Okay, now we're moving. Okay, so the human rights issues that you were dealing with as a member of this Human Rights Commission or Council, were those issues also present in the schools? Were you running into?
The part was actually the group started from the school incident. Human Rights Council started as a school incident.
There was an incident?
Yeah, many years ago. Means in Concord Public Schools, we do have city kids coming under the program known as a METCO. So these kids are coming from Boston area to attend the school system in Concord. And this has been going on, and apparently there was a one-punch fight in the high school in the last day of the school closing between a white child and a black child. That means, of course, the white child from Concord and the black child from Boston. And, you know, basically the school's response was, well, it's a kids fight. But the METCO program officials, they said, no, we are not going to send our children to Concord anymore because Concord's environment is not conducive. Sorry. So they put Concord on probation. They felt that Concord was not keeping up to what they thought they would be. And I think that is where some people from the school committee, they took it upon themselves to improve the climate. So actually Human Rights Council started from the school situation. And so the council was formed. The woman who took the lead, her house was, people will throw trash or something on her lawn and everything.
Who was that woman?
Ruth Salinger.
Ruth
Salinger. And so Human Rights Council's motto is pretty much, it says climate for freedom. And the climate of the community is the responsibility of the citizens. So even if it was a one-punch fight, it's not just because it's just the boys fighting. If it is a black and white issue, it is racism, and we need to tackle with it. So yes, it did start from the school system. And then it moved. And then actually over the years, Concord took respect for differences as a goal for the school system. So all the teachers would be evaluated on what were they doing to improve the climate in their classrooms. How do they promote the respect for differences? So we have come a long, long way. And so it was an interesting time. And the town is definitely a much better town because of that leadership at the Human Rights Council.
Why was it Concord Carlisle of all the communities around here?
Concord Public School, our high school is a regional high school. So Carlisle has its own public school up to 8th grade. But then 9th grade children come to the Concord Carlisle High School. So high school is a regional high school. So that's why.
But did your groups go, the roadshow, go to other communities?
Oh, yeah. We went anywhere where people will ask. To the colleges, we were not limited to Concord.
You'd think this one punch kind of experience would not be just a Concord thing, would it?
That's right, and this is what I think is the specialty of this town is that citizens here took notice of that and say we need to do something about it. That's the part is I think so special about Concord. Because of the history or whatnot, people understand the oppression, what it is like, and how do you take care of it? How do you stand up for it? So that's the way I look at it. Because after all, when the Minutemen took the fight, it was they felt they were oppressed, right? So it was the same thing, in a way. If in our school, if there is one child who feels oppressed or whatever, we need to take a stand on it. And so I thought that was really remarkable that the community took that leadership.
And that was what year?
I think it happened in 78, 79.
So we're talking over 30 years ago.
Right.
And you were brand new in Concord.
Right. But I came to know about Concord Carlisle Human Rights Council, or maybe I saw that, I don't even remember the show for the Traveling Road Show on Prejudice, and I said, oh, this is the group I need to belong. I need to find out what do they do. So that's how I got involved in it. And it has been wonderful, and right, the council still exists, and every other year they give an award to a community group which has shown the leadership in taking care of the needs of people who are, you can say, less fortunate. So the group has evolved into that, to recognize the groups who are helping less fortunate people. So it's good. It is a good group of people.
So not necessarily human rights, but anti-poverty?
Yeah. Basically, the definition of human rights can be very broad. You know, poverty is not necessarily a part of this thing, but say, for example, domestic violence, that is also a human rights issue in a way. Disability.
It certainly is a spin-off of poverty.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it is a spin-off of poverty. Sometimes it could be the cultural differences. So in a way, it is a very broad definition.
So you've also worked with accessibility issues, were you starting to say? Or groups that work on that?
I am not that involved right now in the organization. They do have, they do work with many different groups. Trying to create an environment where everybody can feel equal, feel good about belonging. I think that should be, that could be the simple explanation.
Were there gender issues at that time that were emerging?
In those days, we did not deal with the gender issues, I think, as much. No.
You didn't deal with it?
No. It was more these discrimination issues, racism.
What about discriminating against gay kids? Or?
Gay kids, that was not, at that time, it was not the issue. But again, Concord was one of the earlier school which started, Concord Carlisle High School, which started a group to support the gay, you know, the sexual orientation of the children. And that started, when was it, way back in 1990s. So even that is over 20 years old in Concord. And that was, again, a part of the respect for differences, part of the school policy, that just because a child is different in the sexual orientation or anything, that does not mean that that child should be punished or looked differently. So I think Concord was one of the first school system to start that kind of an organization in the high school.
So that was a whole different level of awareness.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And they addressed that how, were you saying?
Well, Concord Carlisle High School started a group of the students. And I don't remember exactly what the group was known as. And anybody could be a member of that group. It didn't say that you have to be gay or bisexual, or anybody could be a member, anybody who wanted to help and be part of it. So yeah, so they started that group long time ago, in 1990s.
And where did your own work take you then?
Oh, that's another story.
Work and life.
Well, what happened was, in my case, so I was doing all this consulting and community work and all those things. In 1992, my husband passed away. And he, in 1986, he had started an engineering company. You know, we come from an entrepreneurial family, right? So he got tired of working for somebody else, so he started the company. And as, so in 1992, he passed away of a heart attack, all of a sudden. And that time, my daughters were 19 and 15-year-old. One was in the high school and one was in college. I was a stay-home mom. And because it was a new business, we're only 6 years, not even 6 years old company. We had put everything into the company, so there was no savings, no college funds, nothing. So I had to do something now to take care of my children, their social, emotional well-being, as well as education and everything. So I took over the company, to run the company. And that was a challenge, because it is an engineering company, and I don't have any background in engineering. But since my daughter was 15-year-old, so for me, she was the priority. And she had two more years of the high school, and if I go to work, which I needed to work, I needed to get a salary to support my family. If I went anywhere else, I will not have any freedom to come home in case if she needed me, and you know. But if it is my own company, I can do whatever I need to do. So keeping that in mind, I took over the company, and I said I will give myself 2 years until she can graduate from the high school. I didn't want to change the house, you know, or move into a smaller place and conserve some money and all those things, because I just didn't want to make any other changes in her life than what she was going through already. So I took over the company, and I started to run, not knowing anything about engineering, not knowing anything about how to run a business, but I did. And so I'm still running that company. It is a hydrogen energy company, so we are working in the clean energy area, and we are getting some funding from NASA. Actually, we have about 4 different contracts working with NASA right now. And we also have a product line that we developed, which we are selling all over the world. And this is to set up the labs for the researchers in this area. So yes, so I have evolved in a different way, learning the engineering, learning the business, building a business, and the company finished 25 years, and I have been running for last almost 20 years. So yes, so <it's
laughs> And have you been able to keep up in your original field at all?
Not much, and so this is the part I feel. We are working in the hydrogen energy, and you guys might be aware, nowadays there is so much talk about clean energy and lower carbon emission and all those things. Hydrogen energy has no emission, and the byproduct is a drinking water. This has been used in the space flights, mostly. All the space flights had a fuel cell. That's what we are doing, fuel cells. So the altruistic part of me feels if we can provide this kind of an energy all over the world, then we are not only we are cleaning the environment, because still there are several billion people in the world who don't have access to electricity. So if I can provide electricity to all these people, which does not pollute the environment, it will provide economic and educational opportunities. So I think that passion is what keeps me going into this technology. That if I can do it, that will feel good. That, yes, I have been able to make a difference. But always any of these things, they need a lot of money. And raising money has been a challenge for me. So right now, I have taken the approach that even if I can advance the technology, and if somebody else can take it to the next level, that will be okay. So that's what I am doing. So it is altruism of a different kind. And along with this, I have been still very involved with the women's issues, women's empowerment, domestic violence.
Here?
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Well, I wouldn't say that I know much about the town of Concord in that area. But, you know, being an immigrant woman, I know how it impacts the immigrant woman's life, the domestic violence. So that part, you know, I do feel that I can help the women because there are cultural issues in the domestic violence also. And what happens, especially for an immigrant, like when I came, I had no family here, not a single person from my family. So most of the immigrant women who have come here, they are alone. There is no network to nurture them. Forget about providing support. And in many cultures, especially in Indian culture, it is also considered a taboo that you don't talk about it because you are bringing shame to the family. So you don't know the rules and regulations of the laws of the land because you don't get involved into the society. So one of the part I feel I had been involved into the community, not only in Concord, like I had been also part of the American Association of University Women, which is an organization for graduate women, and it is a national organization. So being involved into the community, I at least know where can women go for help, what can be done, what are the resources available. So I have been, you know. And then what we found out myself, that it is not just enough for these women to, say, get out of the abusive relationships. Because you can get out of the abusive relationship, but still you are even more isolated now. Because when you are married, at least you had the social network getting together with other couples or other families. But when you get a divorce, mostly it is the women who are the outcast, not the guys. So we have, you know, so I have been involved into providing that environment for the women so that they can enjoy going out to the events together, get together, have an evening out. So, you know, so I'm pretty passionate about that part, to help women so that they can feel complete and they can feel that they can enjoy the life. They are working hard, but they do need this nurturing. So I'm hoping that I'm providing some nurturing to them so they can feel good about it. So, yeah.
And are immigrant women able to relate across lines of culture with other immigrant women?
Not really.
Identity at all?
No, not really.
No.
And this is the part. This is where the isolation becomes very difficult, very hard. Because every ethnic group, they have their own safety network. And many of the immigrant women, it is not just the Indian, like Chinese and all those things, they are part of that network only. Many of them, they haven't even got out of that network and get connected to the American network. I feel I have been fortunate in that way, that I have plenty of wonderful, wonderful American friends whom I consider extension of my family. My kids feel good with them. They consider them as a family. So that has, and being also the, you know, cultural consultant or my educational background, I can put myself in the different perspectives of looking at the things because of the anthropology background and all. So I am, you can say, trying to be a bridge between these women and the American culture on a personal level. But trying to go to other cultures, it's very hard. I have been part of many different groups, like the general Asian groups, which is Chinese and Japanese, Vietnamese, and I have been part of that. But not many people have been able to go and make connections in that way.
Well, you have been driven by, first and foremost, a curiosity, it seems to me. I mean, when you came to Concord, you said, how am I going to learn about this place if I don't start getting involved in civic activities?
Well, this is a part curiosity. Also, I always want to belong to place. And you cannot belong just by living in a town or living somewhere. In order to belong, you have to really learn. You have to get involved. By getting involved, only you belong. That's the way I feel it. So I always, I had been a little bit more in that way right from the beginning. And I think I have to give that credit to some extent to my father. My father was a community person. He really got involved into the community. Means the community that I come from, as I mentioned, the business community, business people did not get involved into the social causes. They were just more focused on the business and making money. So social causes, sometimes they didn't pay much attention to it. Okay, you give them money and that's it. But my father got involved into the social causes. He was always for the poor people or for the laborers and all those things. And everybody used to kind of joke about it, that he doesn't care about his business. If a worker is having a hard time, he will leave his shop and go and help the worker and solve the problem. So I think I got that from my father, to get involved into the community. And I remember when my father passed away, I did go from here for the services and all those things. And there was a memorial service that I attended, and it touched my heart. We had never known there were all these laborers who were not even making a dollar a day. They all came to pay a tribute to my dad. They were not wearing, you know, their clothes were ripped and all those things, but he made an impact in their life. I was totally, totally touched.
And reinforced.
It reinforced, yes.
In your own approach.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because what he was doing was never appreciated by the family members. Because, of course, the family members and the relatives, they always think, he's distracted, he's not making money. But I think this is the part I feel that I was fortunate to grow up in a family where making a living or making a good money living was not the highest dream. People were interested in doing other things. Even my grandmother was like that. She was also a trendsetter into defying some of the norms of the society. If it didn't make sense to her, she said, no, it hurts the animal. I'm not going to do this. So I think, I got those from from my parents and the grandmother, to be a little bit aware of things around you rather than just being totally in yourself. So, and that has helped, you know. I mean, this town has become my extended family kind of a thing. You know, I know that I can contact people, I can talk with them, and I know that they will help me if I need any help. So it feels good.
Now, but you're still actively involved in nurturing and working with, in some capacity, immigrant women.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
How do you identify these women as being in need of that kind of help?
Actually, we get mostly these women through the word of mouth.
We
means I had started, but now we have several people involved into the group.
The group.
We don't have any name.
A name. I love it. Okay. Totally below the radar.
That's right. Because I did start a couple of other groups. But you know, when you have the groups, then always there are issues of the hierarchies and the power plays and all those things. So I just decided I don't want any names or anything. We just need to do the work that we want to do. So who cares whether there is a name or not. So we don't have any name, we don't have any structure, and we keep on thinking that we should give a name.
What about a shelter? Do you have a facility?
No. This is very an informal kind of a thing. We get together in each and everybody's houses time to time, or we'll go to see the movie or something. And anybody can send an email. So we have an email list. We're still small, about 20 people. So depending on whoever wants to invite, and we've kept it very, very flexible. There is nothing binding. So if I want to have an event, that doesn't mean that I have to invite all 20. I can invite only 10 people. And this is the whole idea, that we have to learn to respect people's choices rather than making any judgments. So if somebody doesn't want to have everyone, let's not feel bad about it. Let's not put the guilt trip on the other person. So be it. That's it. So it's very loose, but it is trying to develop that understanding that just because somebody did invite me or did not invite me, that doesn't mean that I am less important or more important. It is that person's decision that shouldn't make a reflection on who we are. So that's, you know, so basic, very, very basic about feeling good about yourself, not to make the judgments on the others, and provide the environment where you do feel, whenever you are together, you feel that you are nurtured.
But its primary focus is addressing the needs of women who are experiencing domestic violence?
No, not the domestic violence. It is a primary focus is empowerment. Because the different situation, life situations, like for example, if a woman is going through the divorce or a woman became a widow, these are major things. And it makes a woman feel helpless. So it's just to empower the women and to provide nurturing. Because those are the times when sometimes even your family is not part of your nurturing anymore. I went through that myself. And I know that, and your friends, who are your friends as a couple friends, they all fall on the sideline when the couple is not a couple anymore, for whatever reasons.
For whatever reason.
Yeah. So then you feel very painful. What did I do wrong?
Where is everybody?
Yeah. So we are, I'm trying to just fill up that gap. And it has been good for me also. It is not just for them. It's good for me also. It nurtures me. Because these people are so affectionate, so nice. So it's not that you can say I'm selfish. I'm getting nurtured from them. So it's fantastic.
So there are other groups that might work solely with abused women. Then.
Right. There are.
Shelters.
And there are. And I had been part of all of them. But I do feel after being doing all those things that that is only one part.
What is?
These other women's group, which has the domestic violence issues and all those things. That
shelters
is,
and so on.
Yep.
Take care of one part. Of
that is take care
problem.
Of only one part. Just the immediate need. And there is a continuous need. And what I'm doing right now is providing that continual need. And whenever a woman feels she graduates, and we do have women who are married also. So it is not just a single woman, but there are many more single women than the married in our group. But it is just, you know, call it a sisterhood kind of a thing.
What was the process of developing a sisterhood for yourself upon arrival in Concord?
For me, it was not a sisterhood at that time. But yes, I did join, like for example, I did join AAUW, American Association of University Women. And I did meet some wonderful women in that group who are still my friends. So it was not consciously to develop the sisterhood. It was more I went there for the professional networking and meeting people, meeting other women. So indirectly, yeah.
How was that for you as an Asian woman, as an Indian woman arriving in Concord then in the late 70s?
It was fine. You know, the part is, again, as an immigrant, if I want to stay indoor, nobody needs to know about me. There is no need for other people to know about me. So I had to make an effort, and I feel it is an important thing, that an immigrant has to make an effort to be part of the bigger community. So I was interested in meeting with more people. And so I joined the groups where I could meet. And it was actually for me, when I joined the AUW, it was great. I met other women, because one of the motto of AUW is, it is only the college graduate women who could be member. So you are meeting with the professional women who are in the different stages of their lives, either working or raising children, but they are all college graduates. So it was good that the programs were of the level that you can enjoy, you know. And I met some women who were really very activist and very strong, and so it was good to meet with them. And I actually became the president of that organization after several years. So they accepted me. You know, it wasn't that, okay, who is she? You know, you have to just, and this is where I do feel, if one doesn't get involved, then you are on the fringes. But if you get involved, then you are making people know you. Because now you have to take some action, and you have to listen. Means I remember I was also a trustee for one of the local private school here in Concord, Neshova Brooks School. And the first time when I was nominated or appointed a trustee, and that time I was also the president of Concord Middle School, PTG, Parents Teachers Group. So it was very interesting. And my kids never went to the private school. So they were all public school children. And here I am being appointed trustee for a private school. And so when I told to the PTG group that I have been appointed to trustee, and I still remember, you know, one of the person made a comment. And they first asked, gee, did your kids go there? And I said, no. And how did you get appointed? And I said, well, I don't know. I do know that the school is very sincere about the diversity. So they want somebody to come and help to create that kind of a diverse climate in the school and all. And so this person said, well, but you know that you will be a token there. Because if I'm the only minority, I will be a token, right? And I said, yeah, I do know that. But if I am there, they have to listen to me. And if I'm not, so, and this is the part. If the immigrant or if the minority, they don't get involved, then people are never going to know about them. And, you know, we did make a lot of changes in the school. And we hired actually a new head of the school. And the diversity became a major mission of the school, how to increase not only the student population, how the curriculum reflects the whole thing, how the school policy reflects the whole thing. And it was a wonderful, it was a very, very good feeling, because you are opening the horizons of the people. So, yeah, so I do get involved in things, you're right.
A missionary for changing missions.
I don't know what that word, but yes, I do like to, you know. And I do feel, you know, when people many times they do comment about how immigrants are isolated and all those things, and I don't think it is a one-sided blame. If people are inside their homes, and to put the blame on a main community, that's not right. Those people also, you know, you have to stretch your hand a little bit so that somebody can touch and hold it. But if you don't, it doesn't work.
Is it as easy if you're not a university? diversity woman to join these different groups?
Sure. Community organizations, you know, you can. And I keep on telling many of my Indian friends who are in the town, I keep on telling them they should get involved. They should get into the town committees or this or that, you know. But not everybody does. People don't want to leave their comfort level. You want everything. And I think that's the part. Now, many of these committees, many of the places, it's very easy. And people really like if you participate. One of the things that I have found, which is fantastic, in most of the organizations or the committees that I have worked, people really do appreciate whatever little you do. They're just fabulous people around. So, you know, for me, all these have been nurturing me. It is work, but I know that if I'm not involved, I will not survive.
So well, you sound like a highly spiritual person. I wonder, can you talk about a little bit about your spiritual life and religious
sure.
affiliations in this little community?
Sure. I can tell you, well, by birth, I am a Hindu. And Hinduism is a very open-ended religion. We don't have any do's and don'ts. Actually, generally, Hinduism is more of a way of life rather than any practicing dogmas or something. So I grew up in a family that, again, nothing was imposed on me. Like, you know, many of the families here, you have to go to the church or go to the, you know, religious schools and all those things. There was nothing imposed on me. My mother, grandmother, they will always have, you can call it a morning ritual of doing worshiping and reading books and all those things, almost like an hour, hour and a half of their private time
daily.
But they never imposed anything on me. So I grew up in that kind of an environment. So it was more like your own beliefs, what it is. But one of the things I remember when I went to the high school, and this was a all-girls school, and it was a part of a school building which also had the temple in the ground floor, and the building was on the top. And it was not a religious school. It was a secular school, but there was happened to be a temple on the ground floor. So for the morning assemblies, we will all get together in the temple. And on the wall, there was something written, and it was very interesting, and that's where I think that sometimes these indirect messaging, how it impacts. So in Hinduism, we have many, many religious books. There is not one book that has all the things that you should be doing and not doing, and this is why this religion is very flexible. So on one of the wall, it says that out of 18 different books, which is known as the Puranas, and the writer is Puran, P-U-R-A-N-A-S, Puranas. So,
Puranas.
Yeah, so in these 18 Puranas, the writer Vyas, he says, Vyas, V-Y-A-S. So Vyas says that there is nothing more virtuous than doing good to others. And there is nothing more there is nothing more sinful than to hurt others. So it doesn't matter whether you do anything else, religious activities wise or pilgrimages or anything. It's all irrelevant. Only thing you need to do is help others and not to hurt others. And I think that just kind of stayed with me, that I never really bothered to do any religious activity directly. But I have to tell, when my husband passed away in 92, that was a very, very hard time. Financially, we were having a hard time before he passed away because of the business, you know, situations and everything. So there were many negative things in my life. And none of my family could come here. So here I was going to the memorial funeral services, just myself and my two daughters. There's not a single other soul. And taking care of the responsibility. So it was kind of feeling very, very lonesome. And I felt my home environment was also very negative because of the stresses in the family. So again, it was one of those things I remembered listening in the childhood, that having the spiritual or the religious songs and everything, it can clean the environment, cleansing of the environment. You know, you light the incense and that can clean the environment. So I started to do that, started in the beginning with lighting the incense the first couple of days. And I still remember that when I did that the very first time, second time, and I came home from the work in the evening, the fragrance of the incense was lingering in the house. And it almost felt like welcoming smell. I still cannot believe it. It was so this thing. And so I started to do that, that, you know, I will light the incense in the morning and I will have some music. And mostly it is the devotional music. I don't do active meditation and all those things, but that morning period while I'm having my breakfast or whatever, it became my meditative stage. I'm working, but the music is in the background and the incense fragrance is there. That's what my spiritual work is, actually. And it has been very, very peaceful. And now anybody who comes in my home, they'll say, your home is such a peaceful environment. It is just so, really speaking, I do think I cleaned out the environment, the toxicity that was there in the home. It has taken care of. And so my spiritual life here in the town, I do go to the First Parish Church time to time, which is a Unitarian church. They do celebrate Diwali, which is a Hindu festival.
Spelled.
Diwali, D-I-W-A-L-I, Diwali, which is a Hindu festival.
Celebrating?
It is actually celebrating many different things. In my community, we worship the goddess of wealth on that night. It is also the celebration of the houses. The places are decorated with lights, lamps. So it is also considered a celebration of light over the darkness. So there are many different stories, but it is one of the biggest festival in India, almost like Christmas here, of that extent. And even if you are not a Hindu, everybody celebrates it. So First Parish has been celebrating Diwali. And the first year they did it was in 93. And that is the year my mother passed away in India. And I remember I lost my husband in 92 and my mother in 93. And my father was already gone. So I had many deaths during that period. So I remember I was in India for my mother's services. And my daughter was here. And she called me that, Mom, the minister from the First Parish had called and he would like me to dance for the Diwali. What do you say? And I said, well, this is up to you. If you want to, sure. So that was the first year that the church celebrated Diwali. And it really felt so good, you know, because for the festival, generally we dress up, you know, it's like Christmas. Dress up in nice clothes, fancy clothes, sometimes maybe new. And we had been doing that inside the home or in the Indian community. Because I remember in the morning when we were going to the church, and my daughter asked me, my elder daughter was there too, and she said, so Mom, what shall we wear? And I just said, well, wear what you wear for Diwali. You know, so it was kind of, it is a festival that we are taking it to the mainstream community. You're dressing up like that. So it was almost like homecoming, that you feel like that you are part of the big community. You are doing the celebration with them. So yeah, so I do go, and First Parish has been celebrating it ever since. They haven't stopped. I also started in another tradition at that time. So when First Parish did Diwali in 93, in 94, I think not in 93, but following year, I invited them, you know, some of the members from the First Parish at my home for a lunch, a Diwali lunch. And again, my rationale, I think a little too much. I said, well, my kids are in the college, and my other elder daughter was graduating, and I said, who knows whether they will be able to come back home or not. So if I start this tradition, then I will not feel alone. I can invite the friends and the First Parish, and I said, they are celebrating. I need to reciprocate, to invite them so that they can see what the Indian families do. So I started that as a tradition, starting with the First Parish members and the friends. And it has been wonderful. My kids have been coming to Diwali every year. Now they are married and they have their own children, but they will come. And it has become a big tradition. So I will have the Diwali brunch, and the Indian friends and American friends and the Chinese and whoever, everybody comes. So, yes, yeah, so, and so spiritual life-wise, I am still very much, religion is my private part of the life. You know, that morning ritual is, I don't necessarily go to the Indian Hindu temples. It's not that I am against it, but for me it is something very private.
Do they exist?
Oh yeah, there are plenty. There are plenty of Indian temples. And for some people, they need to go to the temple. For me, I don't. I am peaceful at home. I will go to the temple if there is a company and go. And I go there, it is fine. But I don't have that desire to make long trip to go there. I don't need to, I don't feel that I need to go anywhere. My spiritual life is in my home. That's it.
Does First Parish have a woman minister?
No.
No. Okay, I'm thinking of something else.
Assistant.
Assistant minister is. Yeah. Jenny Rankin, yeah. She's an assistant minister right now.
Jenny Rankin.
Yeah.
We interviewed her.
Right. I think if I remember now, since I think she's the one who gave my name to you guys. It's okay. It's okay. No, actually, it was very flattering. Last year, Concord celebrated its 375th anniversary. So one group of citizens here, they organized this program, which was fantastic. They called it Vox Populi. And they invited some of the Concord people to tell their stories. And so they invited me. And I said, you know, Concord has a history of the old times, so we now want to collect the stories of the people who are living in the town to see what do they think. It was a wonderful program. So, yeah, so my name goes around one way or another.
So talk about that. That's fascinating. Vox Populi?
Yeah, it was fantastic. They had invited about 10 people. You can get, I think, the tape must be available through the CCTV. And all of us were coming from many different backgrounds kind of things, which was an interesting. So I think the organizer's idea was to show the diversity of the town, the people who live here, and where do they come from, and what excites them, and what is it. So there was one guy was a writer, and another person was an entrepreneur, this Nantucket Nectar Juice Company people. The founder is a Concord resident. And then there is a farmer who was here, the storm chaser, and the bookstore person. So it
storm
was
storm chaser.
Yeah.
What's a storm chaser?
This guy, he chases the tornado storms.
Oh, I bet I've seen it maybe on TV or something.
Yeah, you might have. So it was kind of an interesting group of people to, you know, talk about their experiences. It's fantastic.
And a soulful person like you was on that. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So yeah, so my name keeps on going around since I'm out there all the time, I guess.
I'm sure glad it came to us. Yeah. You came to us.
Yeah, this has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we haven't asked you that if we knew you better, we would have asked you? Anything else you'd like to talk about that we haven't covered?
I don't know. I think only other part could be, how do you raise your children? Living in a community and also trying to establish your own traditions. So the children are really bicultural, that they have a very strong identity about themselves being part of both culture and not to have any confusion. And I think that part is an important part because this is what the immigrants will be facing. Means when I came here, I had a very strong identity about myself. It was Indian. I knew what it meant. But for my girls, it's different because they are part of this culture. They are born here. But they also have a very strong feeling about being an Indian. So I think that part is another part which town like Concord does help promote that identity. Because as I mentioned earlier, respect for differences. So if you go in a school and you are respected, then you don't have to be shy about it. So I remember when my kids were in the elementary school for this festival, Diwali, I will take some snacks for my daughter's class and share it, tell the story. So that my this thing was so my children's friends will know where is she coming from, rather than not knowing who she is. One year, actually, it was so funny. My daughter was in the middle school, and they had the international club. And so the teachers, they decided that they will learn about the Diwali festival. So they brought the whole group at my home. And kids came in a bus, a school bus. It was like a field trip to learn about Indian culture and the holidays. And so it was a field trip at my home. And my daughter is like, I am so embarrassed. The school bus is standing right in front of our home. But at the same time, for many of those children who came, it was just a wonderful treat. Sometimes I will meet someone, oh, Mrs. Chalan, how are you? Oh, you don't know me, but I came to your home for the Diwali festival. I'm saying, oh my God. So I think that part becomes an important part also. And that, a town like this helps the children to develop that positive self about themselves. So my girls, means they are both grown up and all, and I feel good about them. They have no ifs and buts who they are. They are very, very comfortable being part of both cultures. Very comfortable in conveying that message if they needed to convey it when they got married, for example. So it was interesting when my elder daughter got married. So originally I come from a vegetarian family, so we did not eat meat, fish, eggs, nothing. And a wedding in our community is a religious tradition. And my husband's elder sister was going to come, and I was nervous because it was a wedding after his death, and it is his sister, and whether she will be happy, unhappy, and all those things. So I was very nervous, and I said, well, I don't think we can provide any meat for the wedding meal because that's not common in my family back there. And my daughter was able to convey that to her future husband and to his family.
Who are not Indian?
They are not Indian. Both of the in-laws are American. And she was able to convey that there will be no meat in the wedding, in the reception dinner. And it was fine with them. They were wonderful to accept it. I said, okay.
In both cases?
Well, my younger daughter, by that time I was a little bit more bold, so I didn't care about it anymore. I said, no beef. But other than that, it will be okay. But So it was very nice to be able to have the children who could convey that part of their identity very clearly to their partners and to their in-laws. So my elder daughter's in-laws, they were just fantastic. They said, well, if that is the tradition, that is fine. I asked both of those relatives that the girls wanted a Hindu wedding. I said, well, we will have the Hindu wedding, but if you want a church wedding or anything else, I will be glad to accommodate that, you know, because after all, I have to respect their tradition. And they said, no, a wedding is wedding, doesn't matter what. But it was interesting, like my, and this is where I think I'm a little bit different. Many Indian parents, when their children are getting married, they will try to see that the other party, if it is an American, they wear American Indian clothing and all those things. And my daughter's mother-in-law, she asked me, so what do you want me to wear for the wedding? Because it was going to be a Hindu wedding. And I told her, I said, Linda, it's your son who is getting married. You should wear what you want to wear. If you want to wear an Indian outfit, then let me know. But otherwise, you should wear what you want. And I think that kind of an understanding helps developing the relationship. So they said, no, then we will just wear, you know, and she just decided to wear a skirt and a sign. And my younger daughter's mother-in-law, she was Irish. She's from South Boston, so she's a real Boston person. And so we talked about it, and I had given her a silk shawl as a gift. And so that's what she did. She had her regular dress, but she wanted to wear that shawl to show her connection to the Indian. So it was kind of, you know, so I think that part is also, a town like this can help tremendously for children to develop that positive self-concept about themselves.
Dancers join hands in the two-way waltz.
Pardon?
Dancers join hands in the two-way waltz.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where I do feel wonderful about being a part of the community. Yes, I had to make an effort, but also the community had embraced me too. And that has been a wonderful feeling. And this is really, it has become my home now. You know, yes, when I go to India, it is still a hometown in a way. In a way, not hometown. Actually, now it is more like a family members. But hometown-wise, this town is what I know more about than where I was born, to be honest with you. So, yeah, I think that's probably it. I don't have any other ideas.
Thank you. This has been a real treat for us.
Thank you.
Because we study many cultures and we love stories about what happens when it all works out and everybody can embrace everybody else. It goes way beyond tolerance.
Yes, it does. Tolerance is only one level.
The ground floor.
It is a ground floor, yes. I agree with you.
And I don't have much patience if that's all there is.
Yeah.
It's a good
starting point.
Starting point.
It is a good starting point, but it's
but
not
it's
enough.
It's not the end. It's
no.
not enough.
And very soon you can see that yes, people tolerate you, but you are not part of that community. That's not good enough. That, you know, in some ways I would feel it will be rather better if they are hostile, because when they tolerate, you don't know where you are.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.